going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and you're here for the very first expectation show of this season. We're starting a little earlier this year, it being May 12th. We're recording this. So you have an idea if something changes by the time you hear this. That's probably the reason why. But wanted to set some material while I'm going to vacation next month. Have some things ready to go. Today, we're going to talk about Jalen Armour Davis and Rashad Bateman. It's always one player on the offense, one player on the defense. Remember, joining us to do that is the great Cordell Woodland of 105.7. Cordell, how you doing?
What's going on, Ken? Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to talk football with you, my friend, as we know. Let's talk Jalen Armour Davis first. Certainly a disappointing first 3 years in the NFL. He'll be entering year four, and he still has just 172 career defensive snaps.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story, and that was kind of the story with him coming out of college at Alabama, had all the measurables. I think he was a guy that the Ravens really liked. I mean, even throughout his injury issues, throughout his professional career, they've continuously shown how much they really like him, because anytime he is able to play, they put him out there. But yeah, I mean, that was kind of the question mark coming into the NFL, and you look, and he's yet to play more than 8 games in any year of his career through the first 3 years. So that's disappointing for him, because, you know, when he's been out there, I think he's been a serviceable player for them. He has the body type. He has the aggressiveness that they like to see. And now, you know, they've started over the last 2 years now, they've started to really bolster that corner room. So it's probably going to be an uphill battle for Jalen Armour Davis this year.
Yeah, to even make the team, yeah. I think we'd agree. In last year in camp, you know, you and I, of course, were both there, and John Harbaugh kind of went out of his way to answer questions in a positive way about JAD. Said he thought he was playing great, was there. One of the things about camp play is it really makes Jalen Armour Davis look better than he is. Because the big problem Jalen Armour Davis has is really a lot of the big problem that Brandon Stevens had, is he does not find the football in the air, even though he can run in the hip pocket with a lot of other wide receivers in this league. And certainly has the speed to do that. But he does not turn and find that football very well. And so in camp, when you're not supposed to be contesting the football anyway, you're not supposed to be, you know, taking risks with injuries downfield, then he definitely looks better than he is.
No doubt. I mean, especially, you know, and during camp in general, like you said, it's not a lot of contact. Guys, DBs aren't encouraged to try to make a play on the ball, so he gets away with a lot of that stuff. I think they just like his shadow ability. Same thing, like you mentioned with Brandon Stevens, that they love. They love the fact that at least he's there. They feel like he's in position. He's physical. So those are the things they like. And Jalen Armour Davis has been good on special teams as well, which we all know is the way to John Harbaugh's heart.
Yeah, that's a good point. Active for 7 games, but played 94 snaps. on defense, and he had a significant special teams role. Only had 9 targets the all of last season. Just not anything really to go on. He's not a guy who's particularly versatile within the Ravens scheme. Now, the Ravens have 3 of the most versatile defensive backs in the entire league in Humphrey, Washington, and Hamilton. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they don't need a lot of versatility, but Armour Davis is purely an outside corner. And I think what you said earlier about it being a tough uphill battle is right. They've got Chidobe Awuzie coming in. Humphrey is there. If anytime they're in a base package, they're going to want Humphrey on the outside. They're not going to need to have an Armour Davis or dipping into that pool is going pretty low. And of course they have Nate Wiggins returning for his second year, who might be the Ravens' top corner this year, at least the top outside corner.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Him and Marlon together, in my mind, are the top 2 corners on their depth chart. You mentioned them; they brought in Chidobe Awuzie. We'll see what they can get from him, how healthy he'll be this year. But I think he's more of a depth guy. The positive thing for them is they have 3 versatile safeties that can play in the box with Ardarius Washington and Kyle Hamilton, and now Malachi Starks. We still need to see also what some of their picks from last year end up doing as well in the corner department as well. So it's going to be tough to find some snaps, I think, for a lot of these guys, because you got guys like TJ Tample, who I think the Ravens really want to get a good look at this year as well.
Yeah, Tampa is one of the soon upcoming shows. Isaiah Likely and TJ Tampa may actually be tomorrow if you're listening to this, depending on what day. But Tampa, I think, is a guy who they have to find out what they have this year, whereas JED, kind of think they know what they have. Mm-hmm. And the two guys I look at on the Ravens as the biggest potential trade possibilities at the end of camp, and this all assumes depth holds up at these positions, are JED and David Ajabo.
Yeah, I mean, I think JD, at least he has, you know, he has things on film. I think there would be possibly somebody interested in him. You got to hope he's healthy, because you got to almost hold your breath every time he's on the field in hopes that he'll be able to make it off healthy. So, you know, we'll see what happens. The Ravens have been able to make some of those back end of training camp or back end of preseason trades. And like I said, Armour Davis has played enough to where maybe there will be a team that's just interested in him. David Ajabo, I'm not sure. You know, I really don't know what to think of David Ajabo right now. He hasn't really been able to show much. He's rarely available. And even when he is available, it seems like they're hesitant to put him out there. So don't really think he has much of a market. Definitely not as much of a market that maybe Armour Davis will have, because David Ajabo really hasn't been able to show anything, and the injury concerns are kind of a backbreaker.
And when I say trade, I mean a conditional 7th in terms of both of those guys. They'd be guys who you'd otherwise cut. Yeah. So you're right. Sometimes you find the perfect matchup, and there's another team who has an extra player at a position that you need, and that works out. But that's pretty Walt Disney for that to happen. That happens about 1 time in 15, maybe, that you really get that to work out. Now, the other pressure that Armour Davis will face, and I think this is his reasonable pressure, because I think Humphrey, Wiggins, Awuzie, and Tampa are clearly the top 4 for me in terms of who makes the roster at corner. But the 2 draft picks, Longerbeam and Kone, are guys who probably get scarfed at least over the course of time as the replacement level drops throughout the season with injuries. Those guys will be guys that'll be in demand. If you put them in the practice squad, you might not lose them initially, but you stand a much better chance to lose them as the season rolls on. And I see both those guys having 4 years of team control and JED only having 1. And I'd say JED has to be a lot better than those 2 players in order to make the team.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's cheap labor right there. Those are guys that they invested in all these guys. All these guys are draft picks, all 3 of them that you mentioned. But like you said, the team control, they've had Armour Davis for 3 years now. He's got 1 year left. They just got Longerbeam and Kone. So I think they'll definitely give those young guys every opportunity to see what they can do. And I agree. I think Armour Davis is going to have to be undeniably good to make the back end of this roster.
Right. And that's what I'd see. And honestly, as I don't really see in under normal circumstances, you know, without some significant injury, that he's really going to break through in terms of his snap count either, that he's all of a sudden going to see the field a lot. He's a nice player in a way because of what you mentioned about special teams earlier, is that he's a special teams player who can play defense. And the Ravens cannot afford, I don't believe, to have a bunch of special teams players who are only here to play special teams. You need a special team slash defender. You need a special team slash wide receiver like Tylan Wallace, like we hope Walker ends up being. But you can't really afford to have guys who are just special teams players. There are enormous clogs on your team. And the Ravens have new clogs to deal with. In particular, specifically this year, it's Vincent. He's a guy I don't think will be active for any games. He's so far away in terms of from a strength perspective. You probably, you know, we're out there watching him at camp some too. He's very far away from a technique perspective as well, though he's getting great coaching, rep after rep from Warhop. But, he's a guy who will take a spot on the 53 without probably ever seeing an active game day roster.
Yeah, at least initially. And that's the hope, you know, because you don't want to have to start digging into the depth of your offensive line right now, or really at any point. So, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, with Vincent, I think Emory Jones is kind of the guy that they're looking at to be kind of that Swiss Army knife along their offensive line. I think they like him more as a guard than they do tackle, but they believe he can play tackle if they were in a jam. So I think he'd get the nod over Vincent right now. I think there are elements of Vincent's game that obviously they like, they drafted him. But yeah, he's a project guy. I don't anticipate seeing him play much anytime soon.
I was very excited that the Ravens drafted Vincent for multiple reasons. First of all, I think he is a pretty good gamble as an eventual left tackle player. And for him, his body shape, body type, everything, he's left tackle or nothing. He's a tall, lean guy. He's reasonably muscular, but he has very little in the way of functional strength at this point. And what's worse is I think he's gotten into kind of some bad habits at Alabama A&M, being a guy who can throw people at that level to the ground using his very much college level strength, we'll call it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to take him time. But here's the beauty of this. The Ravens have time. Roger Rosengarten and Ronnie Stanley, in theory, are both under contract for 3 years. In truth, they might want to get out of the Stanley contract after two. And if they do, then you know, having a player like Vincent ready to step in at left tackle would be really nice. So I think the Ravens don't always have that luxury, but they had it right now. And I thought this is a great time to take a shot on a developmental tackle. And they've really got about three. They've got the 6'9 guy who's very soft up top, GCL Jared Christian Lichtenhand, right? Mm-hmm. And then they've got the Jared Penning, and I think there's one other too that they may have, who's a potential offensive tackle who's there at rookie camp.
Joe Noteboom.
Well, Joe Noteboom they acquired by trade, so I think he's going to be the guy who's ready to go when they have a problem this year.
Oh, you're talking about Ozzie Hutchinson?
Probably. Probably. Yeah, so it's another big tall guy. One of the problems, and this is kind of a funny story, but they give you a roster at rookie minicamp, which is basically contains about half the players, because mm-hmm. you got minicamp tryout invite guys, and then you got the UDFA guys. And in one particular case, and I consider it one particularly important case this year, we didn't really know whether a guy was a UDFA or a tryout guy. And that was Nash Hutmaker, who I thought was right there in the nose tackle fight, but was only there for a tryout. Now he's with Tampa Bay already. They've already lost him. So it's frustrating to be there on that particular day. And you can't tell the players even with a scorecard is the right. Kind of the note on it.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little of a cluster for sure. We didn't get the roster sheets until we were on our way out. Like you said, a lot of the guys aren't on there. So it's rookie mini camp, you know, I guess for everybody. Everybody's still trying to get ready for the season right now.
Yeah. I certainly don't blame the Ravens PR for this. But in any case, let's move on and talk about JAD and what makes a good season for him and what makes a great season. We'll start. What would you like to see from JAD in terms of it being a good season? And by the way, as always, the guest defines this however they want. I define it my own specific way, which I'll talk about in a minute.
Well, yeah, I think it's tough to talk about a positive season for Armour Davis without mentioning health. Like, it's the number one thing about him, the number one issue for him, the thing that has really kept him from probably reaching his true potential, even as a backup. So I think number one is for him to be available and, you know, constantly able to play, I think is the number one thing for him. Number two would be to make some impact plays. I mean, and that's the big issue for this Ravens defense as a whole coming into this year, is trying to make game changing plays this season. That's what they lacked last season. The turnovers, momentum changing plays, like that's what the Ravens defense, when they're at their best, that's what they're getting. And that's what they're lacking right now. And I think that's what they're hoping to get out of this year's defense, but specifically this year's secondary. They're hoping that guys are able to get their hands on the ball more. So if Armour Davis can kind of be one of those guys to get a couple of turnovers or force a couple of turnovers or be a part of some impact plays, I think that'd be good for him. But, that's why I would say a good season for him is being healthy, making impact plays, whether it's on special teams or spot opportunities on defense. Those are probably the main things that come to mind for me, because I think even at best, if he is able to crack this roster, he's still going to be a depth piece.
Right. Well, I'm certainly with you on that. I'd say for a good season, I'll just read it to you directly because I don't think I have a lot to add. Turns a corner in terms of development in camp and earns a roster spot. By the way, I'm not sure that he's got a 40% chance to make this roster. I set mine at the 60th percentile. I'm not sure his chance to make the roster is that good, because they have to make a tough cut with, Longerbeam or Kone or, you know, I don't know if maybe Tampa is injured or something. Their depth would have to kind of fall apart in a way for him to make the roster. But in terms of his own play, I want him to contribute as a four unit special teams player, play some snaps as the team's number five and number four or five outside corner. I can't talk about it any further than that, because I don't think the chance of him playing more, 250 snaps or something, which I might have as a goal for somebody like TJ Tampa, is reasonable at all. I just, I can't see that. And I think that mirrors a lot of what you're saying anyway. So why don't we move on and talk about what a great season is?
I would say a great season is, A, he makes the roster. B, unfortunately, there are multiple events that happen to people ahead of him, and he's in there kind of in the same role Brandon Stevens was in, three, four years ago when the Ravens secondary was decimated, and he's out there, but he ends up showing himself to kind of be this guy that A, is able to stay healthy and be reliable and is able to play on a daily basis, is able to be a true starter for you for the rest of the season. That's probably what I could think of as being the best. A great season for him is being a weekly contributor. But again, it would take a few unfortunate events, I think, for that to happen.
How lousy a season would that be for the Ravens?
Yeah, it'd be a pretty bad season, probably.
Bad season. Yeah. I'll just read you mine directly. He plays in the preseason and not only demands a roster spot, but he outplays and outpractices at least one of the four players ahead of him on the draft chart. And I'm talking about the four players who I think are distinctly ahead of him, which is the end guy is Tampa. It's not impossible that he could outplay TJ Tampa. We haven't seen anything from him yet. He's very unlikely outplays Humphrey, Wiggins, and Awuzie. But the first thing you have to do to outplay and outpractice those guys is to be available during preseason. JAT has been a magnet for soft tissue injuries. And this is something the Ravens in the secondary and at wide receiver in particular, where there are tons of camp soft tissue injuries that cost people their only snaps they'll get all year in the preseason. I mean, with JAD, that's certainly been true. He's barely played the preseason in his 3 years in Baltimore. And that's been a big problem with him ever getting a chance to play during the regular season. So he's got to be healthy during camp for that. And then he earns some playing time as a number four outside corner. He sees the field for some meaningful trial. I'd say 150 plus snaps would be what I'd set for a great season, 80th percentile. And he improves his own survivability in the league. I don't think that's necessarily with Baltimore in 2026, but it could be. He could be a lifer who becomes one of these guys that the Ravens want to keep around on special teams to be their fifth cornerback, the way they've kept around Tylan Wallace or Albert McClellan in past years, or Anthony Levine, you know, as a safety who is a great dime back and a guy who you could rely on special teams. So if he's going to be a long-term Baltimore player, I almost certainly think that's the path it'll be. I don't think he's going to sign a 3-year, $9 million deal with the Ravens next year, but not with the Ravens, you know, having some young corners and whatnot to choose from and, you know, still going against the draft picks. But I think he could do it as a survivor if he did it via the special teams draft.
Yeah, I mean, special teams is definitely a good way to get noticed around the league. So I think, yeah, that'd probably turn into a successful season for him, as if he is able to at least put together good film to be able to earn himself a next stop after Baltimore, because even if he does make the team, this is probably it.
All right, let's move on. Talk about Rashad Bateman. I think people probably been waiting to hear this one. Maybe wish we led with it so they don't have to listen to half the podcast. Tough crap. That's not how this usually works. So breakout season in 2024, he had 10.5 yards per target. That was the most ever by a Ravens wide receiver. Let's get that out there right now. He had a 12.5% TD rate per target. It was 9 touchdowns and 72 targets, which is the highest ever for a Ravens wide receiver also. And he had 132.2 passer rating throwing to him. Amazing breakout and massive turnaround from his 2023 season.
Oh, yeah, easily. I mean, and again, same thing with Armour Davis. It all starts with health for Rashad Bateman. You know, he's had health issues in the early part of his career. And to his credit, the last two seasons, I would say, the injury bug hasn't really been an issue for him. He didn't have the year he wanted to have 2 years ago, but he was able to kind of check that health box, which was a huge hurdle for him. And I think it helped give Lamar that confidence in this past season that at least Bateman would be there. You know, it was tough for them in the past because it felt like as soon as they got going, one of them, something would happen with one of them. It just really felt like something was in the air in Baltimore to where the football gods did not want Lamar Jackson and Rashad Bateman on the field at the same time, but for so long. And the last 2 years, that's changed. Excuse me, that's changed. So I think for Bateman to be able to hit on some of those deep passes that they weren't able to hit on 2 years ago was huge. I mean, he was the deep threat for the team, scoring touchdowns, pivotal touchdowns. And what I liked was it graduated from, all right, Bateman's catching the bombs to Bateman's catching contested passes in the end zone. I mean, he started to really play with a ton of confidence, and I think in large part due to his quarterback showing confidence in him, but him giving his quarterback reasons to be confident in him because they were on the same page a lot this past year, which wasn't always the case in years past.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're being almost kind in the way you've said this. Lamar just clearly did not trust Bateman. And doesn't matter what the guy will say about Bateman being a fine receiver and whatnot. Yeah. What mattered was he was overthrowing Bateman by 10 yards so frequently in 2023 that he wasn't really giving him a chance to go get the football. And this last year, much more, on schedule with Bateman there. On schedule is a term, though, I got to come back at and really talk about what I mean. He's good about throwing the ball to the spot deep for Bateman. The big kind of an obstacle for Bateman working with Lamar is that Bateman is the team's best route runner. And he is outstanding coming out of the break. He's got real wiggle at the top of the route of the stem. And he can present himself to Lamar immediately after that break. A lot of the separation metrics, by the way, they magnify what he does at the top of the route. Because his speed it's good, but it's not at the very top end. Lamar actually mitigates the value of his speed because he doesn't make a lot of on-schedule throws. He wants to see that route develop. His almost like a great poker player who wants to play more post-flop play. You know, they can they know they can beat you and outread you and outplay you after the flop. Lamar wants to do that same thing with an extended play. And Bateman, I think a lot of his success in terms of improving himself was the success he had on extended plays with Lamar. Lamar distributed the football much better personally. That he took a step forward in that area. But Bateman was a big part of the not just Mark Andrews extended play Ravens.
No doubt about it. I mean, that's the way to Lamar's heart, and really any mobile quarterback's heart, is can they trust you in the scramble drill? Can they trust you when the play breaks down? And yes, for the most part, it's been Zay and Mark Andrews, but Bateman was a big part of that this past season, being able to make the plays down the field. And you know, we've seen times in the past where Lamar's tried to go to Bateman in those instances and it doesn't work. It may even result in an interception. Just his QBR was not very high with targets at Rashad Bateman. But to their credit, they really worked on that. They really locked in and got on the same page despite not having a lot of off-season time together. Because remember, they didn't do a lot of off-season training with each other last year. That was a huge talking point. Mm-hmm. But they still were able to find a way to make that work. So, and I agree with you with Lamar not being very on schedule. He's very accurate. It's you don't really see that combination very often, right? Because in the NFL, usually when you miss that window, it's tougher to get a pass completed after that. But Lamar is just, Lamar's different. He's very different. And I think Lamar, you know, you talk about Bateman's success down the field, a large part due to Lamar's deep ball getting better in general. I mean, I thought Lamar started to put a little more air under his deep balls this year, as opposed to the year before, where it just felt like more of a line drive and a missile that's mm-hmm. really just getting down there so fast and is overshooting his guys. He gave way more catchable passes down the field this year. And Bateman was one of the guys that was able to benefit from that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, no doubt about it. And I got to give some of the credit to players like Flowers, like Bateman, still like Andrews and Likely, because I think they've always done this pretty well, is they present themselves very well to Lamar when they're crossing the field, when they're going horizontally in either direction, really. They really give an opportunity. I keep thinking about the play in the end zone. Lamar, and this is against the Steelers in the playoffs, mm-hmm. the first touchdown on 3rd and 15 or whatever it was, it threw the ball between two defenders where the window was actually closing pretty rapidly. But not only did Bateman have some distance from the guy who was trailing him, which is, you always love to see that, is a guy, you know, he beat him at the top of the stem pretty bit, given what his speed is like. Flowers, he's so sudden, he might develop that kind of separation anytime. But in the case of Bateman, he beat him at the top of the route, and then he's open by enough, and he's able to adjust to go down for the football as Lamar kind of threw it a little bit low. As just outstanding, and I'm so happy for the way Rashad's career has taken a abrupt turn here. You know, a year ago he signed that 3-year deal, the extension that was in large part born of the being business 2 days late for camp. Yeah, business catastrophe. There you go. He's now got one of the most valuable second contracts of any receiver in the entire NFL. He's one of the few guys that you could trade on the second contract that's truly worth a first round pick, because he only makes $10.7 million total the next 2 years. People talk about Pickens and you know, a lot of people, and you're familiar with this, obviously, when you go out on Twitter, and certainly when you're taking calls at a radio station, you hear from a lot of people who they just have a feel about how good the player is. They don't want to ever consider what the cap implications are or whatever. And they think that oh, you know, so-and-so is a much better player than Rashad Bateman. And George Pickens is a good example. Pickens might be, or he might not be, a better receiver than Bateman at this point. I can accept the argument in either direction. They're not even close in terms of value. Pickens has 1 year left at $3.7 million on his contract. Then you have the right to sign him to a massive, massive deal. Bateman has two, and that's just a lot more valuable.
Yeah, I mean, Bateman's definitely coming at a cheaper rate. I think, you know, I mean, you talk about him and Pickens. It's kind of pick your poisons. Pickens probably has more upside than Rashad Bateman, I would say. But, you know, Bateman playing with Lamar Jackson, his upside could go through the roof right now. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, and Pickens in his own right is going to Dallas playing with Dak Prescott, who throws the ball all over the field. They may throw for 5,000 yards this year because I don't see how they're going to run the ball. But so between him and CeeDee Lamb, they both may be over 1,200 yards receiving this year. Wouldn't shock me. But yeah, I mean, you know, each team prioritizes things differently. I'm of the mindset when you're a contending team, money is, you know, not at the forefront. I'm about talent, you know, when you're a true contending team. And in the case of Rashad Bateman with the Ravens, it's a best case scenario because you get the talent and you get the efficient contract at the same time. And we all saw the report of Dallas calling the Ravens for Rashad.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint or stain project, saving is at the top of your to-do list. Save now with buy one, get one half off select paints, stains, and primers from top brands like Valspar, HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, and Cabot via Visa gift card rebate. Find more Memorial Day deals now at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 5/15 through 5/28.
Bateman, and apparently that call didn't last very long. So I think the Ravens understand what they have in Bateman. They're just probably scratching the surface of how good he can really be, which is great because I think there are areas for Rashad to improve. He was great as a vertical threat this year, but I think he's easily the best route runner, I think, on their team.
Oh, by far. Yeah.
And I would love to see Rashad get back to a little bit of what we saw early in his career of some of the short to intermediate. He's too good of a route runner for him to be limited to just, you know, 25, 20 plus yard passes. I think he's a guy that you can get the ball to in any part of the field. We've seen him take slants to the house. We've seen him do some of the in-breaking routes. I just like to see Rashad Bateman really get back to being a complete receiver because I think he could do it.
Yeah, I think he can too, and he is very clearly the best route runner. But the route you just mentioned there is the most important route for big X receivers to be. It's one of the most important to be the complementary route for them. So you always want guys who can go deep and then punish the cornerback who's always sitting on the deep route with some sort of comeback. So the two routes are comeback and slant. Mm-hmm. You can have dig in there too if you want to, but basically routes that come back to the quarterback. Either on the sideline, which Lamar almost never throws, or at the middle of the field. But you think about the slant pass, total number of slant passes Lamar Jackson threw last year is very low. It is just not what he does. Lamar Jackson tries to move around, develop an open passing lane with his feet to somebody that he already sees the route developing and is watching separation occur. It's been a wonderful formula for him because he's so good at extending plays like that. If he were a pocket passer, or if he were Joe Flacco in terms of his feet, well, first of all, he'd be a completely different player, obviously. But if he couldn't move around very much, he'd have to be watching and have a much bigger route tree that was available for a number of different receivers to try and get them the football quickly. And he'd be like any number of other guys we've seen, Manning late career, Brady late career, where the game is all focused around how do they get the football out of their hands and still make play fakes during that brief time.
Yeah, I mean, I like we talked about earlier, Lamar's not the most on-time passer. He wants to hold the ball, the whole two-step drop, let it go. That's not necessarily, I mean, he'll do it every blue moon, but that's not Lamar's game. So totally understand that. I just feel like they're, and look, they do it with Zay sometimes. You know, Zay is their quick guy. I get it. He's the guy that if there's anybody that's going to get the ball just like that off the line, it'll be him, maybe Mark on some of the short routes likely too. But I think when, especially considering how important Yak is these days, Bateman has shown the ability at points in his career to be a really good Yak receiver, especially early in his career. I just want to get the total package of Bateman. And I feel like we, you know, it felt like Christmas for a lot of Ravens fans. I'm sure watching him have the year that he had this year, I just feel like there's so much left on the table that he could get to. And, you know, Lamar's a good enough quarterback to do pretty much anything out there. I just want to see them open it up a little bit for him.
Well, that's, I mean, first of all, I think that'd be great. And it really depends on what Lamar surprises us with this year. Every single year of his career, he's brought something new to his game. And it could be that, you know, a quick passing game, an on-schedule passing game, particularly with Bateman, but with others as well, could be exactly what he brings to camp this year. And it's one thing we can always be excited to see is what's going on. I think Todd Monken will probe and try and find those additional things too. I think he's a really good offensive coordinator for Lamar. All right. You know, one of the things that I think could help Bateman is the fact I think this offense is going to be kind of a fresh legs offense. And I'll harken back to a game from the 1990s in college football. And Cordell, you might or might not even been alive at the time.
Oh, I was.
All right. So Houston beat SMU 95-21. Do you remember that? Okay. I'll give you the fundamentals here. SMU was coming off the death penalty, playing their first season back with a bunch of freshmen and sophomores. And Houston beat them 95-21 and became the first college team ever to roll up 1,000 offensive yards. Okay. And they did it with Andre Ware, two NFL quarterbacks Andre Ware was in the game. I think it's Andre Ware to start the game. The guy played for the Lions eventually. And then David Klingler, who was a kind of a journeyman backup guy who spent some time with Seattle and some other teams. They had a bunch of different receivers, but the main thing that they did and the thing that the SMU coach was complaining about is they had a bunch of injuries at corner in the game from having to continually be on the field against these guys. And Houston continued to put in fresh receivers every play. So they have five new receivers, eligible receivers. And I think that's what the Ravens may do this year. The Ravens, you know, when they have these, you know, 14, 15 play drives, they can be based on the run. But if you bring in fresh receivers every play, you put a ton of stress on opposing secondaries as well to get them covered up.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that now with pass rushers, right? I mean, we've seen that the last few years. The Eagles have done that. They've had, like, their different pass rush groups. Everybody thinks about the Eagles team that just won the Super Bowl, and they had a ton of pass rushers. But even going back to the Nick Foles year where they won the Super Bowl, I mean, they had pass rush units. And I think that was really the thing that allowed the Eagles to go on to win the Super Bowl. Remember, Carson Wentz gets hurt, and Carson Wentz is having an MVP-type year, but their defense really kept them afloat. And I think it's because they had so many fresh bodies going after the quarterback. And look, if I think it's a little different at receiver because we're talking about two now. We're talking about, you know, with pass rushes, it's just them kind of working, doing their own thing to get to the quarterback. Whereas receivers, you kind of got to be on the same page as your quarterback. You need your quarterback to know who these guys are and to have a rapport with these guys. So, you know, it's tougher to cycle those that many guys in because you might have somebody who's not in sync with the quarterback and takes the wrong step or doesn't get enough depth on their route or whatever the case may be, and it could be catastrophic. But in the case for the Ravens, if they have a handful enough of guys, and right now I could think of, I don't know about receivers, but pass catchers, I mean, it's at least 4 to 5 guys that come to mind right now, pass catchers that I think the Ravens can trust on a daily basis. So, yeah, they spread the ball around a lot last year. I think that'll be the case for them again this year.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, Kolar doesn't get many opportunities, but they really have three tight ends who've been fantastic. They've, the last 2 years combined, they've had 143.5 passer rating throwing to the tight ends, that has included 30 touchdowns and one interception. So that's remarkable in its own right. But what they've got at wide receiver right now is greater than the Ravens have ever had. And that includes that 1996 season when they had Jackson and Alexander together. They've got Wester this year, who I think is going to immediately play an actual role on offense. I think he'll you know, what do I mean by that? 25 targets, maybe. I think he'll play a lot of the gadget plays that go to Flowers. Wester will be a rotational guy that can put on the field for some of that stuff. And you know, that we're going to hopefully have to see something from Walker at some point to see exactly what we got there. I you know, obviously my expectations are a little bit lower for what happens at. And hey, look at their number three receiver, who's not threatening to break the top two, by the way. But it's really nice to have a guy like D-Hop around who can move around as needed and be a guy that they rotate in and out of that lineup.
Yeah, D-Hop will be a really good addition, I think, just because he's a vet. He's a great player throughout his career. I don't really get – when you talk about D-Hop, people always talk about the metrics. He's an older player. Look, he's in his 30s. He's obviously not the same guy he was 5 years ago. But – I love D-Hop because he's one of those guys that has been able to adjust to, you know, his body changing or his skill diminishing or the limitations that comes with just getting older in the league. He still has great hands, doesn't necessarily have to rely on separation because he's one of the best contested catch receivers of his time. He's quarterback friendly. He's a third down monster. That's at least he did. A lot of people talk about his stint with Kansas City not being great, but one thing he was for them was a third down catching machine. So that's something that has value in itself. So, and the fact that, like you said, he's not threatening any of the young guys that are there. That's good in itself. So look, maybe it does. It means that you don't see a lot of Devontae Walker. I think most likely, yeah, you probably will get, more of Wester than you get Walker this year, just because Wester just feels like he has more of a higher ceiling in terms of what can happen when you get the ball in his hands, similar to Zay, like you mentioned. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what role Wester gets. I think it'll be very limited, if any, early in the year, and maybe as time goes on, you'll start to see him sprinkle him in there. But I think that'll be because he's making plays on special teams, and now they want to find new ways to get the ball in his hands on offense.
Yeah, we talked about that with JAD, of course, but Wester has tremendous value to the Ravens on special teams. They had obviously big problems in terms of holding on to the ball on punts, in terms of getting underneath punts and making clean catches. I mean, that's a big part of that, is you don't want to give the other team an extra 15 yards of roll. And sometimes it works out in your favor and sometimes it doesn't. But most of the time, more often than not, you lose yardage when your player doesn't get under the football on a punt. So anyway, Wester's hopefully will give them that. And then once he's on the team for that, you know, you've always got chances to get him in there and improve the rest for your other players. You know, get somebody else on the field for a down. He's a perfect guy to spell Flowers because he brings you a lot of what Flowers has. He's also... It's probably less ideal to have them both on the field at the same time, but if he's taking some of that gadget play around, then hopefully Flowers is running routes with a higher A dot that do more to manipulate and morph the defense. A lot of football is in how you manipulate that safety in your passing game, and trying to get that safety worked over onto Zay Flowers so you can get all kinds of play action opportunities for your tight ends, crossing routes, all the kind of things you can get out of that. Has tremendous value. If Zay Flowers, or Bateman for that matter, is a guy who only has to be played by an island cornerback, he's much less valuable.
No doubt. No doubt. So, you know, I think they have some versatility. And look, Tylan Wallace as well, you got to kind of keep your eye out for him. We'll see what happens with him. But yeah, I mean, I think they have a nice group of guys in the wide receiver room. And then obviously you team that with the tight end room that they have. And look, Justice Hill was fantastic out of the backfield for them as a pass catcher last year. So they have no shortage of weapons or guys that can do something with the ball. And I like Wester just because you need, again, I mentioned it earlier, just talking about Yak, like you just need somebody that's going to make plays with the ball in their hands, and somebody like him that you can get the ball to, whether it's on a jet sweep, whether it's on a pitch or a handoff or a simple bubble screen, he can be dangerous in the open field, which is why I think they chose him as a punt returner, because they feel like if there's a crease to be had, he will find it and he'll make the most of it.
Yeah. Looking forward to seeing him return kicks at camp. That's for sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about Bateman and what makes a good season and a great season. Let's start with a good season. How would you define it?
A good season for Bate, I think, is kind of, you know, going along with what he did last year, to be honest with you. I mean, it's hard to really argue 9 touchdowns. He had almost 800 yards receiving. I'd like to see him cross over that 800-yard threshold. I think he can do that. The touchdowns, look, I won't complain. If you're in that 7 to 10 range of receiving touchdowns, I'll take that for Rashad Bateman. So if he can kind of stay where he was or even grow on that, that'd be great. But, again, health, staying available, I think that's a good season. Last year was a great season for Bateman. If he duplicates last year, because you want to see them grow, I think if he duplicates the great season he had last year, that'd be a good season for me this year.
Okay, so I think he's actually going to have a very hard time duplicating the per-target statistics he had last year, because he was the best ever in Ravens history at 10.5 yards per target. I don't see that repeating. I don't see that as being sustainable. The 12.5% touchdown rate, I don't think that's sustainable either. Right. But I think he'll get more targets, and so he could get – as many yards. I think the 60th percentile bar I'd put at him for is, I'll put it in terms of yards per target. I don't do this for a lot of players. For most players, I try and do a qualitative element of what a good and great season is. But in the case of Bateman, I think it's easier to do because he's a wide receiver. I'd like to see 9.0 yards per target. That's a significant reduction from 10.5 on 85 plus targets. So maybe see 765 yards as kind of the minimum for what I expect. That's just 9.0 times 85. I think that's not unreasonable. One thing I think is kind of a fool's errand is trying to positively prognosticate yardage totals for Ravens receivers. The Ravens offense just doesn't work that way. First of all, they beat the living shit out of most of their opponents. So when that happens, they're not passing in the fourth quarter. It costs them a ton of yards relative to other receivers in the league. Anybody who plays fantasy football, that's not me, but I know other people who play fantasy football always talk about, can I get a wide receiver on a bad team? Can I get a wide receiver on the Dallas Cowboys or on the Detroit Lions or on the Detroit Lions of old and the Arizona Cardinals and see if I can really pile up some yardage that way. That's not the Ravens way. And the other thing about this is, the Ravens offense doesn't flow through any wide receiver. There's no Wilt Chamberlain in the Ravens offensive scheme that's on the receiving end. Our Wilt Chamberlain is Lamar Jackson. The ball flows through him, and everything the Ravens do offensively is about maximizing Lamar Jackson. And those other players, they're all supporting roles. They are all supporting actors within that offense. Nobody else has a lead role. And as soon as receivers start to think that way, you know, if George Pickens were in Baltimore, I can't believe it would last long just because he'd be unhappy very quickly. Marquise Brown probably was a little bit the same way. At least he didn't say anything about it. But you know, the offense didn't work for him if he wants to be a high volume, you know, high target guy. He got lots of deep ball opportunities with the Ravens, but this is Lamar Jackson led offense, and how Lamar Jackson maximizes the Ravens is what it's all about.
No doubt. I mean, he's Michael Jackson, and you know, everybody else is on the background dancers, and rightfully so. That's the way it should be if you want to have any success with the way that the team is built. But yeah, I agree. This is an efficient offense, an efficient passing offense specifically. So you're not going to get a lot of the typical wide receiver one or wide receiver two statistics. But again, what stands out to me are the touchdowns. Rashad Bateman, nine touchdowns. I mean, it's hard to find teams with number one wide receivers that finish a year with nine touchdowns. And Bateman here was the second receiver on the team this year. So, I mean, and that's with Mark Andrews leading all tight ends this year and receiving touchdowns. That's with Zay Flowers still having a really good year. That's with Derrick Henry still putting up monster numbers on the ground and Lamar putting up MVP numbers. Like, this is an offense that's predicated on maximizing opportunities. And I think the nine touchdowns for Bateman kind of symbolizes that for him.
All right, let's move on to a great season. What would that entail for Bateman?
I think a great season for Bateman, I'm looking at probably close to 900 yards. You know, it's like you're blowing it out of the water now. I mean, it's not just the deep balls, or maybe it is, you know, the deep balls are even just as good as they were last year, but he's mixing in some of the yak ability with some of the short to intermediate opportunities that he's getting as well. I think a great season for Bateman touchdown wise is, again, I guess if you're at nine, you cross over into that double digit range. It's hard for me to get upset about that. You get 10 plus touchdowns. Health still got to be a part of Bateman's story. So I would say still being reliable, but yeah, a great season would be, you know, Bateman, you look up and Bateman's like in the conversation of like top 12 to 15 wide receivers in terms of just, you know, guys that you would want on your team at that time. And I think he's talented enough to do it, but I don't know if it's only one ball. So I don't know if Rashad Bateman is able to put up better numbers overall than he did last year, honestly. But if he was going to have a great season, 10 plus touchdowns, 850 plus yards, I would say, and probably around 82 to 85 catches.
Yeah, you know, it's not
I'm
hard.
Sorry, 82 to 85 targets, I would say, probably okay. Around 55, 60 catches.
Okay. I mean, that's actually very reasonable. I actually set it a little higher than that. But one of the things that I think could generate a higher target for season for him is if there's some lack of health around him. Mm-hmm. So if D-Hop were to be lost at some point, he's an older player, that's always possible, even though he's been quite durable. If Flowers were lost for a period of time, and the Ravens really had to rely on more of Bateman being more like a number one receiver, then I think that you could see more. But I'd say for a great season, again, this is 80th percentile. I'd like to see the connection with Lamar take another step forward in some way. We talked about more on schedule throws. That could be a great way. So if Lamar comes to camp and all of a sudden he's figured out some new way to impact defenses, and maybe it's the on-time passing game, that'd be fantastic. But Bateman becomes a higher volume threat that includes 100-plus targets and 9.5-plus yards per target. That puts him at 950 yards between those two. And you notice both of my numbers, I'm expecting a drop-off in that yards per target number. It's an outlier. That touchdown number, by the way, also a big-time outlier. It's the best ever for a Ravens wide receiver. I really don't expect him to duplicate it, but that's okay. If it's 5-6 touchdowns and he's otherwise duplicating elements of the 2024 season, that'd be really honestly fantastic. I think that to me, those elements together, 100-plus targets would certainly be a great season for Rashad Bateman, assuming his rate statistics don't drop by too much. By the way, you mentioned Andrews last year. Andrews had the highest ever touchdown percentage for any Ravens pass catcher with 30 or more targets. It might have been 13, 14, 15% of his targets went for touchdowns last year. I mean, it's an absurd number. Mm-hmm. As much as, you know, we've, you know, been beating on him a little bit for what happened in Buffalo, he really did have a terrific year, and it should be a positive for Lamar that he's back. Anything else to say about Rashad Bateman before we move on?
I think for Bateman and like, yes, a lot of those numbers are just gaudy. And I agree. I do think they're outliers just because it's tough to duplicate a lot of that stuff. And especially in the Ravens offense that is predictable, but also a little unpredictable in a sense of you just don't know who's going to get what, who, you know, what guys' numbers are going to look like on the back end of this season. None of us expected, even if we were expecting good things from Rashad Bateman, none of us expected it to look the way it did last year for him. Nobody expected Mark Andrews to finish with the season he had, considering the way that his season had started. Yep. They're very unpredictable. What I would say is a lot of Bateman's catches and big plays, he was able to get a lot of one-on-one opportunities down the field. And that's the one thing for me that makes me feel like maybe the touchdowns can be duplicated in some sense. If they're healthy, you have to pick your poison with these guys, and you have to you have to respect the Zay Flowers crossers. You know, you have to respect those, and he's going to demand another guy to come down because one guy cannot chase Zay Flowers across the field, which opens it up for Bateman on these down the field throws. As long as Lamar is going to be as accurate as Bateman could have possibly had a similar statistical year in 2023 if he and Lamar connected on, you know, half some of those balls, attempts yeah. that they took down the field. So I do think it's tough to defend what they like to do with Bateman vertically down the field. And if teams can't figure out a way to cover all these different weapons that the Ravens have while also still keeping your eye on the most dangerous quarterback in the NFL, it could end up being a duplicate type of year for Bateman where he is living off these explosive plays and he is efficient with those opportunities because one-on-one, he's shown that if it's a catchable ball, he's probably going to win that. So that's the only thing that makes me feel like it is a little replicable is because I think their scheme is a little tough to stop considering the personnel that they have.
Yeah. It is very exciting times for the Ravens offense. And better enjoy it while it's here, folks, because in 2026, there's going to be a very major retooling that's going to have to happen. The tight end room is all graduating out of this place effectively in 2026. Patrick Ricard will be done with his current contract. Now that he's eminently resignable. We know what we saw at this last year. But they're also losing Derrick Henry potentially, and they don't have their next round of replacements for him either, whether that's a guy that they might have gotten in the draft this year. It's not Rasheen Ali, I don't believe. And Justice Hill is getting a little older. We don't know about Keaton Mitchell. So this offense is going to look a lot different other than those big two receivers in 2026.
Definitely. Definitely got to enjoy it while you have it. We'll see what happens in the future. Ravens always want to keep, you know, Eric DaCosta always says they want to keep their good players. So, again, when you're a contended team and you have Lamar Jackson, yeah, you're and eventually his deal will get restructured. So, you know, we'll see what type of cap space that they're looking for. But I'm not saying be financially irresponsible, but definitely when you're a contender, it's about acquiring as much talent as you reasonably can. I am curious to see how the Ravens maneuver with the cap. And maybe they, you know, be a little more aggressive than they have in the past. Who knows? But I am curious to see how desperate they'll be during the second half of Lamar's career.
Right. Potentially they've got Lamar for a long period of time. And I just will say, I really want them to get as many playoff runs as they possibly can out of Lamar, because you never know when it's going to go bad in the playoffs, even though you plan for this to be the year, damn it. And then as soon as that happens, you're really in a deep hole for future years. So they'll have Lamar Jackson for a long time. I kind of feel like it doesn't matter, but you can win with a lot of different offensive units around Lamar Jackson where other teams just don't have that as an option, you know, including two in our own division. So starting with the Browns and the Steelers, of course.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Lamar's he's the straw. So yeah, you can definitely put together a bunch of different types of groups around him and he'll find a way to make it happen. I guess it's just a matter of, you know, is it is it 12, 11 wins, 12 wins and playoff exit? Is it Super Bowl? Like, I'm curious to see. We've seen the Ravens have some really great units. We've seen them have some lackluster ones and have different results. They're a playoff team as long as number 8 is upright. That's not an issue. It's a matter of what they need to do in January, and will they be able to get over the hump? Until they do it, the questions will be there.
Right. All right, well, fair enough. Cordell, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can find your work online and I guess on 105.7 as well.
Yeah, appreciate you having me as always. You could follow me on social media at Cordell Woodland, just how it's put right there. You can catch my show on 105.7 The Fan, me and my co-host Ben Hall, The Fresh Take. We're usually on Thursday evenings, so definitely give us a listen. And just listening to the station, you never know when I'll be on. I do a lot of different hits on a lot of the shows on the station, so I'm always around. And, of course, it's baseball season, so I'm around the Orioles a lot these days. But we've got OTAs and stuff coming up for Ravens, so football season is slowly but surely coming back around.
Yeah, looking forward to it. And this should be a great offseason for of building anticipation for the Ravens. Other folks out there, this is Film Study Short Season. Hit me up with a DM on Twitter if you have an idea for a show that you'd like to talk about, something you're passionate about, hopefully is in the 20-minute range, because we're really looking for some shorter content. I always have to focus on that, but I do appreciate it. Cordell, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
Going to the gym can be discouraging, especially if you're putting in the work but barely seeing changes. But with Tonal, you can actually see your progress with every workout. Tonal provides the convenience of a full gym and the expertise of a personal trainer anytime at home with one sleek system. Designed to reduce your mental load, Tonal is the ultimate strength training system, helping you focus less on workout planning and more on getting results. No more second-guessing your technique. Tonal gives you real-time coaching cues to dial in your form and help you lift safely and effectively. After a quick assessment, Tonal sets the optimal weight for every move and adjusts in 1-pound increments as you get stronger, so you're always challenged. Tonal lets you choose from a variety of expert-led workouts, from strength to aero hit to yoga and mobility to keep you coming back for more. For a limited time, go to Tonal.com to get $500 off your Tonal purchase, plus a free 4-year warranty. That's Tonal.com for $500 off, plus a free 4-year warranty. Tonal.com.